Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:10 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 18th, and it was a pretty positive day on stock markets today. The vast majority were in positive territory, but the two that stand out are the Hang Seng in Hong Kong, which is up over 1%, and then the S&P 500, which is closing above 2,500. It was at 2,500 even on Friday, and it's closing mildly above that today. But the Nasdaq, which flirted with the 6,000 level in here today, has had a little bit more difficulty holding on to that level, but certainly isn't down in a dynamic fashion and has been recouping some of that loss towards the end of the day. You can see that it has been bouncing, or it has been bumping its head against that 6,000 level since the beginning of this year, and indeed since the end of July. But there is nothing in the way of clear downward dynamics to suggest that there's any real selling pressure here, and that it is only a matter of time before it can break on the upside. The S&P 500 having already done so, that is quite positive. But I think it is also worth highlighting that within the Nasdaq there has been really quite a divergence in performance. There's news, for example, that Toys R Us could be filing for bankruptcy as early as today, and that took another chunk out of enthusiasm for Mattel, and it really is just accelerating lower at this stage. And this is against a background where almost nothing has gone right for the share over the last year and a half, even despite the fact that it had that impressive rally in 2016. Then it lost the Disney franchise, and it is continuing to move lower. It still has a PE in the 20s and a dividend yield of about 4%, so it's inevitable that that dividend is going to get cancelled, considering just how quickly this share is retreating in what is a shrinking market. But of course, it highlights again the fact that the primary beneficiary of the demise of another big box retailer is likely to be Amazon, and the share was down a bit in here today. And again, of course, there has been a great deal of good news has been priced in to get it up to these levels around the $1,000, and it has been holding around that $1,000 area now for the last 3 or 4 months. It has unwound most of its overbought condition relative to the trend mean, but it needs to push above the $1,000 level to reassert the medium-term uptrend, because it did fail to sustain the move above it, and so far it has been unable to rise very much beyond it. There were, and if we look at the Hang Seng chart, it is pushing up out of this short-term range in here today. But on the weekly chart, we can see that it is approaching the region of that 2015 peak, and but this time it looks to be more, or at least be better supported. And as long as the progression of higher reaction lows remains intact, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I think it is interesting to contrast it with the mainland's A600 banks index, which is unwinding its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. The Chinese are beginning to talk about liberalizing access to the financial markets, and most particularly with the banks and the insurance markets. And I think that the insurance market offers a rather interesting way of looking at that decision, because insurance is all about pooling risk and therefore minimizing the exposure of any one party within the pool of risk. So perhaps that is the way that China is viewing its own market, that by allowing access, what it is doing is pooling risk. Right now, the central government owns everything, and by allowing access and 100% ownership to foreign enterprises, it is diversifying its risk. It's allowing foreign parties to take positions in what is a market where, regardless of how one wants to define a bubble or overvaluation, I think it is reasonable to conclude that the easy money has been made in the Chinese real estate market. So, by allowing access, the Chinese are both minimizing, or at least hedging their own risk, but also ensuring that if there is a problem in future, that it's not going to be just their problem, it'll be everybody's problem, and therefore it might be getting some assistance from overseas, which certainly wasn't the case back in 2008. It was the Chinese had to sort out the problem of reduced demand from the global economy on its own. And that was what contributed to such a large amount of money flowing into the market. So it's, I believe it's a smart move to allow liberalization because, again, if you view it from that insurance risk pooling perspective. And of course, what it also does is by attracting inward investment, it could potentially strengthen the capital base and could also then help to avoid a problem in future. So there are two ways of looking at it, but I think that if they do in fact go ahead with liberalizing access to the financial markets, then that could be potentially a really quite bullish factor for Hong Kong because it is the financial center and, or certainly it's the financial center for the overseas market, and that could that position as a conduit for access to the mainland market really could be of benefit to Hong Kong. And India stands out as another market that's moving to new and this time all-time highs. It's pulling away from this 10,000 level. It's been pausing here for the last couple of months, and this has been a somewhat larger reaction relative to anything we've seen this year so far, but certainly nothing in the way, nothing that could be even remotely compared to that pullback that we saw at the end of 2016. And it, as long as we see this progression of higher reaction lows being maintained, we would give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. India has certainly got both its demographics and its language on its side. The fact that you've got millions of people coming into the workforce that can speak at least some English is certainly something that is a part of the sales pitch that they could be making to foreign investors, and most particularly in the manufacturing sector. And that is, of course, why the Chinese are investing so heavily in automation, that they don't have low-cost labor any longer, so they need to boost productivity, and the way to do that is with robotics. So, and of course, they don't have the masses, the same number of, at least, of very young people to fill those jobs. So India is well placed, but of course, so is Indonesia. And the Indonesian market is in the region of its peak. It hasn't quite broken out yet, but it has broken up and away from what was a 4-year range. And the Filipino market, where there has been a great deal of news flow about their war on drugs, but the market is now breaking upwards to new high ground. And the Philippine peso, which had been one of the weaker currencies, has at least paused over the last few weeks, but that is still a pretty consistent advance for the US dollar. And that's something that I think is holding back interest in the Filipino market. When we look at the rupee, for example, in India, it is appreciating. It's hard to really argue that the Philippine peso is appreciating in here, but I think that is something to really keep an eye on, because if the stock market is breaking upwards, then and we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, and commodity prices are beginning to turn the corner here, not just for the industrial metals, but for on the broader perspective, then that should be potentially beneficial for emerging markets, and the Philippines is certainly one of those. The gold price was weaker today, and it is unwinding its overbought condition. It had paused around that $1,350 area. It's coming back towards $1,300. That's the upper side of the underlying range, but not quite yet having unwound the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. What we can certainly say about gold and the precious metals generally is that they tend to overshoot both up and down, that they are prone to volatility. I don't think it's particularly helpful to talk about corrections because, especially if you define a correction in that it's a pullback of 10%, because the precious metals are capable of moving that in a couple of days, not to mind that it was overbought, so now we're getting some some unwinding of that. But when we look at the weekly chart, what are we presented with? We're presented with the massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend and then this ensuing range. It's a type 2 bottom with right hand extension. We're at the upper side of that range. There is a potential that we could go lower from here. A clear upward dynamic is going to be required to confirm a return to demand dominance. But we are coming back to a potential area of support, so I think it is worth keeping an eye on. And both silver and platinum are both in the region of their respective trend means. This is at least a potential area where support could be found. And they have replaced short-term overbought conditions with short-term oversold conditions. One of the things that I think is quite interesting is if we look at the 10-year TIPS yield, it hit a low in 2012 of -1%, and it's currently in the region of about 35 basis points. It's been largely range-bound, mostly above zero, for the last 4 years, and it's been ranging in a less volatile manner for all of this year, and it is currently bouncing from the lower side of that range between about 25 and 75 basis points. But this is also reflective of the relatively sanguine attitude that investors have towards inflationary measures. But again, what we are presented with here is a massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend all the way from 2008 through to the end of 2012, and now a period of right-hand extension. Or another way to characterize it would be a first step above the type 2 bottom. And that would suggest that we are eventually going to see this range resolved on the upside, and that would likely coincide with an uptick in inflation. And of course, precious metals do best when inflation is outpacing the rate at which central banks are raising interest rates. And we're not at that particular juncture just yet, but it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that that is what will happen when eventually inflation does begin to pick up and we are seeing wage demand growth improving right now. So certainly there is an argument for looking at precious metals and for remembering that they are best bought following reactions, and that quite often we get inconsistent chart patterns, that they do have this characteristic that they pull back sharply, and then they have equally impressive rallies when they do break out. So I think it is an increasingly interesting sector if we consider that TIPS yields have been going sideways for 4 years already, and that the most likely scenario is that we are going to get an upward break at some stage. Then when we look at the oil price, and I will concentrate on Brent crude, because certainly that is what has the more consistent chart pattern. It is up to $56. It has broken the downward bias evidence since January, and 56 was the peak in April, and we're getting a little bit of a pause there, but it is now trading well above the 200-day moving average. And it has broken the downward bias for the year. It is a little bit overextended in the short term, but as long as it is trading above 50, I think people are likely to give it the benefit of the doubt that we could potentially get it going back up towards $60. But then, of course, a lot of the unconventional supply will become really quite economic, and people will start getting a bit more bullish about it. Whereas WTI is still hovering here below $50 and really does need to sustain a move above it to break its downward bias evidence since the beginning of this year. So I think we are generally in a benign environment, and the reality is that stock markets are by and large they're going higher, but there is very clear winners and losers. We're definitely getting this polarization coming through, and I think that when we start to think about governance, then improving governance in places like India is certainly to be admired, and to realize that that is the kind of thing that will eventually contribute to outperformance. And then when we look at the UK, the stock market was mildly in positive territory in here today, and it is at least pausing in the region of the trend mean, but the pound was down about a full cent at around 135. Now it did race higher at the end of last week, so it is perhaps due some consolidation. But when we look at it on the medium term chart, it does look like the lows are in, and that we are in the beginnings of a new uptrend for the pound, at least versus the dollar, suggesting that the UK could potentially be at the place where we should keep an eye out for inflationary measures, that it is potentially one of those places that we could see at least some evidence of the return of inflation. So let me put up the inflation linked bond for the UK, and we'll take a look at that chart. I think it's worth remembering that we have gone through a period where we had negative real rates for a long time in the US, and now we no longer have them. And now we're starting to see TIPS yields where they have negative yields, or at least recently had negative yields of 2%, but that was a substantial move last week. Equally, we have another base formation here, and we are now at the upper side of that range. If inflation continues to advance in the UK, well then TIPS yields can expect it to be to track higher, and they are really looking quite expensive at these levels. So I think that is another aspect to really keep an eye on the UK, because it is the probably the first developed market that is actually having to deal with an inflationary problem post the financial crisis, and that isn't something that anyone has any experience of for nearly a decade already. So I think that this is a rather interesting chart to monitor. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.